This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to the Hope Centre, where real stories meet real conversations about mental health, growth and hope. I'm Anna, and we're here to share, connect and remind you that you're not alone. Let's dive in. Kia ora and welcome back to the Hope Centre podcast, a project put together by Life Matters Suicide Prevention Trust with the help of ORFM in Dunedin. If you have any topics that you'd like us to cover or are interested in being a guest on the podcast, please reach out to us on our Facebook page or email admin@lifematters.org.nz. Kia ora, I'm Anna.
And this is Omri.
We're both peer support workers at Life Matters and we'll be your hosts for this conversation about hope, healing and lived experience. Welcome to the Hope Centre podcast. Hello.
It's so good to be back.
Yeah, back for another week. I think the weeks go pretty quickly. Bookmarked by these episodes, which is really fun. I guess we've got another exciting episode coming up. I think our third week in a row, maybe, with a guest from outside of the Hope Centre. And I think a really exciting part about the podcasts is, you know, we're able to connect with new people, but also connect with some familiar faces. And today we are joined with Josiah, one of our ex-peer supporters from the Hope Centre. Hello, Josiah. How's it going?
Hello, I'm doing really well. How are you guys?
Yeah, not too
good,
bad.
Thank you. Yeah, nice and cozy in our podcast studio, so yes. can never lose there.
Yes, on this cold Dunedin day, I'm sure you don't miss that.
Well, I actually would rather have cold than wind, I think. My hair wouldn't get as messy.
Yeah. Too true. We're super excited to have you here. And yeah, just want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, how you know the Hope Centre, and a little bit about what you're doing now.
Gotcha. So I actually began working there after just like seeing an advert in my university. And so I've had some like a lived experience with like my own mental health, and then like I've also like just lost some people because of mental health issues too. And it just felt like a good thing to get involved in. And I was really like impressed because even my interview process was just so different to any other thing I've been involved in. And I think it was in the interview that I realized that this is a space I'm going to be really comfortable in. And it was actually awesome because I began working at the Hope Center as I got into the University of Otago Medical School. And then it actually played a little bit of a role in me making the decision to go into mental health research. Nice. And so now I have like kind of three hats I wear, where I'm training with the medical school in Wellington right now. I'm also doing research in mental health, and I also have this background of having experience in lived experience mental health support.
Amazing. Super cool. It doesn't feel like that long since you've been at the Hope Centre, but it's been a couple of years now, right, that you've been away in your medical worlds and up in Wellington. It's been a while.
And actually, I think it doesn't feel that long because of how close the family was there.
Mm-hmm.
I really still feel like I'm a peer supporter, even though it's been 2 years now.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. Well, we're excited to, reconnect with you again, or connect in some cases. It's really, really cool. And also to, I don't know, gain some perspectives and insights from someone who has shifted from, you know, a lived experience space with the work that we do at the Hope Centre into, I suppose, a more of a clinical setting, and learn what that looks like for you and the strengths and challenges that kind of presents.
I was going to say, as someone who didn't work with you, Josiah, you know, saying that, oh, we're doing the podcast with you, for this one, a common theme has been, oh, you're going to love it. He's a rock star. He's a powerhouse. So I'm really looking forward to meeting you and learning more about you and what you do, but also, I want you to know, you know, talking about that family still speaks and thinks very highly of you as well.
Oh, no, that's special. That's really special.
Well deserved from what I've heard. So how we start our podcast is also kind of how we finish them. So our guest from the previous podcast leaves a question for our new guest. And so Mel, the host of the Rainbow Umbrella podcast, left you the question, do you believe in ghosts?
Oh, 100% yes.
Yeah.
Love ghosts.
Yes.
Okay. Do you guys believe in ghosts?
100, yeah.
My question is why.
Oh well, so I actually remember being really scared about ghosts because my grandparents used to tell like us stories when I was younger, and I so clearly remember all these ghost stories that I used to hate back then, and running into my parents' room scared when I was like a little bit too old. Yeah. And if ghosts aren't real, that's a pretty embarrassing story. But if ghosts are real, that story makes sense.
It's validating.
I'd be afraid. So, yeah, I think it's because of that.
For sure. No, my answer is, I suppose I do believe in ghosts. I feel like I've had the odd eerie experience that I can't really explain otherwise. So that's me. And I know Omri believes in ghosts.
Yeah, I worked in the most haunted place in Southern California. I believe, and many other people believe, to be some experience with some sort of thing that's just unexplainable, unless it's explained by ghosts.
Yeah. Amazing. What a good question. Okay. So, we've got a couple of questions that we would like to discuss with you and get your perspectives on. And I suppose the first one is, around self-care. Self-care is something that is hugely important for us at the Hope Centre, but also anybody in general, really important. And I'm curious what is ethics in self-care?
So this is a topic I love discussing because it's my research, and it being my research, I'm banned from discussing it with my partner because I talk too much about it anyway.
You found some new ears.
Yeah. So I guess I'll just like start by discussing some of the terms, right? So what actually is like self-care? I think in a previous episode, one of you guys in the podcast put it really perfectly, where it's a way of looking after yourself that may be different for everyone, but it feels right for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of like ranges from different things. So some of the ways I've seen it being used is like it's used in a official place. So for people working in very emotionally intense jobs like mental health care, and a way to kind of prevent burnout for them. But also like it's seen in the eyes of the public as a way to like treat yourself with like chocolates and candles and baths, that kind of stuff. But then there are also like a few marginalized groups where it's actually like more of a way to save life. So in groups like which are at more risk for stuff like diabetes, it can actually be about like going outside and having a walk. And that is going to be a life preserving thing. And then a few of the more interesting versions of self-care is the more radical ones, and so it's kind of like ways of finding autonomy and liberation from oppression by just being yourself a little bit and taking power back, and so those are kind of like some things I've looked at in how to like what self-care actually means. And there's two things I was gonna like discuss over here. One is like more of the exploitation of like this term to make profit, and the other thing is more of the kind of app-based stuff and how ethics works in that space. I was wondering if you guys had one thing you wanted to discuss.
Omri?
I mean, first I just want to say, really interesting expansion on self-care, because I had never thought of self-care being your authentic self, and I guess for a lot of, as you see those marginalized communities, whether it be cultural or sexuality or gender, caring for yourself is being yourself. It's really important of that. I hadn't thought of that at all, so thank you. Secondly, I think, my interest is piqued by how self-care is exploited for profit.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. So I feel like we all kind of have our own ideas about the way like this thing is exploited, and I guess like I'm also biased in my version of using the word exploitation over there, mm-hmm. because to me mental health is this like thing that's quite a personal, individual, human act, whereas like whereas a person making a profit, I don't always think that it's done for the best reasons over there, and so. One way in which I always think about the way it's exploited. I don't know. Have you guys watched the Parks and Recs TV show?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Do you remember like that episode where Donna and the other guy go on the day of self-care? Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
Treat yourself. Yeah, aww. That's fun. Yeah. I like obviously awesome episode, but I do think like that's a good way of kind of like looking at a way in which may not always be the most effective way of like looking after yourself, mm-hmm. because in that episode it was all about kind of buying stuff and it was like trying to like get a good mental health care from going outside and buying candles or mm-hmm. buying expensive like robes and everything, and I feel like that makes it into more of a process in which you have to have money to go out and buy things that make you happy, mm-hmm. and I think it just kind of makes the whole idea of looking after yourself quite different because like to go out there, you actually have to have money. And so you may already be from like a wealthy background, or you may be working extra in a job that's really hard for you to buy these things that may in the smaller term fix you. But in the long term, you're just going to have like a bunch of expensive robes and a bunch of candles that are half burnt, you know? Mm. And so I think that's one of those ways in which like self-care may be exploited by people looking to make a few bucks.
Mm.
Gosh, I never thought of it like that. You're making me think.
Yeah, especially with how much, you know, like I myself go like, oh, I want a little treat, so I'm going to do more so I can get this treat. But, you know, it is very short-term focused and, you know, which I don't think inherently bad, but can have its negatives, right?
Yeah, like it isn't a thing that's bad only because it's making profit. I think it's bad because of what it makes you do and how it frames this idea of looking after yourself.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I guess like, yeah, I know from my experience, I've probably fallen into that trap. Like it would be nice to buy XYZ and have a self-care day and stuff. But now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, is that sustainable long-term behavior? Probably not.
Yeah. And also like one thing I think that research does badly is talking about problems without fixing them. And so if you guys like want, I can like let you know of some ways in which I change this way of looking at it.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to know what ethical self-care does look like in your life.
So I personally I love to craft and that kind of stuff, right? And I think the crafting space is one of the spaces that's kind of being taken over by people looking to make a quick buck and not actually liking the crafts.
Yeah.
And so one thing I always think about is like I love to do stuff with yarn. Mm-hmm. So kind of like knitting and that kind of stuff. And I've just kind of been going to shops and everything, and I see all these like people that market a learn to knit packet, mm-hmm. Which I think is a good way to start, but I actually don't think that's the best way to do a craft, because if you're buying this kit for like 20 to 40 bucks, mm-hmm. they are just going to these individual shops and they are buying the raw materials and then they are marketing it to you as the only way to learn to knit.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Whereas the way I think was a better way to learn to knit was I bought a bunch of like of these op shop like needles mm-hmm. there. I bought some like yarn from the op shop too, and I went to a friend who like knew how to knit. I tapped him on the shoulder and it's like, hey, do you think you could teach me to do this thing over here?
Sweet.
Yeah. And so
I was to say that's great as well, of as not only that knitting and that crafting, but it's connection and it's people and it's, you know, what makes you feel good as people.
Exactly, yeah. And so I wasn't just in my room trying to like look at these instructions and trying to do this thing. I was with a friend and we were having like jokes about how bad it was at knitting, and it kind of made that bond a bit, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah, you're right. And it's like, for example, crafting does bring people together, and I mean, you're correct. And yeah, as I said, you're making me think, you know, there is different ways to do things from what we may be marketed or what we may see that I guess, is more sustainable, right? And does open us up to more opportunities to connect with other people and to hit a bunch of different self-care, you know, important aspects of self-care.
Exactly. And so I think in terms of thinking about self-care, this is more of like the stuff you make, but also a big part of it is the relaxation,
yeah,
where it is really wonderful to just like put a face mask on and light a candle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think that my mom does a really good job of this, because like I always thought that like the way I relax is by buying those like face mac packs for like, yep, $6, which are awesome. I'm not saying they're a bad thing, but then I think back to what my mom does, because she makes these like pastes from like mint and all these things that she just knows, and then
that's
she uses that on her face, and in the end it's the same exact thing, except it's just using like leftovers in your fridge to make this, and you also aren't gonna like buy this thing and increase the plastic waste in the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah.
Gosh, there's so many positive elements to that, hey?
Yeah, and it's, you know, I really like the sustainability aspect of it too, of, you know, it's using what we already have. We know exactly what's going into it as well. It's something I was talking to my partner, probably last year now, actually. You know, what some face masks have, which others doesn't, which others don't. And, you know, is everything that's going into that face mask actually good for your skin? So, you know, like being able to make something yourself and have it in a way that, cool, I'm reusing this, which I wouldn't be using other anyway. I'd be able to repurpose and I know exactly what it is, would make you feel more relaxed as well. So it's like a double whammy self-care.
You're so right.
Cool.
I think what's kind of sitting with me from this initial conversation is that self-care can look different for everybody depending on what is going on for them, what groups they may belong to and, you know, who they're connected with, but also what we actually do for self-care. Yeah, the stereotypical version in our head is it may seem like something that's glamorous or, you know, something we need money to do, but that's not necessarily the case. And I think that's really important and something important to reinforce for a lot of people we deal with in the mental health space who, you know, see more and more people coming through the door who struggle with these things or, you know, the cost of living in this world. And I think it's a really important message to be reinforcing. Hey,
100%.
Awesome. Yeah. I guess scaling back to, you know, talking about lived experience and kind of the core of what we do at the Hope Centre, what I think is really interesting is obviously you beginning, you know, some mahi in the lived experience space and then through, you know, your medical studies and going to medical school, which is something we typically think of as a more clinical space. And I guess I'm curious how your own lived experience or knowledge of the impact of lived experience shapes how you show up in the clinical space.
And I do think that's a pretty interesting question, because I remember being in those meetings where we were discussing like what the hospital did, and now I'm in the hospital and I'm wondering what people outside are talking about us now, you know.
It's
I think the one thing like that really that shocked me about going from a lived experience space to a clinical space is that the people I work with right now, they have like a ton of lived experience too. I know there's like a researcher up in Auckland that recently like did a look into medical students in Auckland University, and I think almost 80% of them were burnt out, emotionally exhausted, and around 60% had some form of mental illness. So I think within the hospital there is a lot of lived experience, but the key difference is that we are thought about this mask of professionalism, which we have to wear, and I do think that mask is quite useful in some places, but I think the key thing that Life Matters does that's different is they use this lived experience as a source of power, and kind of like reclaiming your mana in a way. Whereas I think in the hospital, I think a few people do it well, but then I think it's a little bit more common maybe to see your lived experience as stuff you don't share with patients, and you treat them as a doctor.
I'm wondering how you have found your practice change within that?
I think it is that, like, reclaiming the mana, right? Like, I'm not as scared of being like a medical student who has a mental illness, who has a disability with a stammer. I don't see that as a thing I have to hide from my patients. Instead, I see it as a really powerful source where I can make a little bit of a pulungatanga, where I can make a bond with the patient over a shared connection over here. Mm-hmm. And so it is the reclaiming of like who I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that again shows the importance of connection and sharing lived experience. And we know, you know, entering these clinical settings, the boundaries do look different, but obviously, you know, sharing some aspects are still really powerful. And that kind of leads into my next question, which was, how do you hold on to the essence of peer support in systems that rely on clinical models?
Yeah, I definitely think it would be quite a tough thing to do if I wasn't like an ex Life Matters person. Yeah. But then it really is just like that way. I hold on to the essence of it is by just remembering the atmosphere of what it was like at Life Matters. And I so clearly remember the fact that there was like really no perceived stigma around lived experience. Like there was no shame in having like difficulties with your work right now. And I think the way I can hold on to the essence is by bringing what we learned as a little family in Life Matters into the clinical space.
Mm-hmm. And then I think that's, going back to what you said before, of that really is that whakawhanaunatanga, that welcoming that you can bring, and something that we do still pride ourselves at the Hope Centre of, is that, we want to accept people for who they are when they walk through that door. And I know, I'm kind of the opposite of you, Josiah, coming from a clinical space to a lived experience, and knowing that there is an aim for clinical as well, but it is harder with that mask of professionalism or different policies and protocols. So it sounds like, you are working really hard at meshing the two rather than breaking one down to insert another.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. And I guess, as a, lived experience peer supporter and, someone that's got a lot of experience within the lived experience space, what is something that you learned during your lived experience work that you think the clinical world could really benefit from?
So I think that there are like around two things I have to say over here. One thing is the number of patients, because one thing I do really miss about Life Matters is having like 15 minutes before and after a consult to just reflect. I remember so many times just like talking with Claire or Cuba after a shift, and then having the capacity in a system to just debrief with someone after a really tough case was invaluable. Whereas I'm sure Omri, the clinical space just goes bam, bam, bam. Mm. And so you don't have time to really think about what just happened in that room.
It's kind of like, I know I've got to hold it for my monthly supervision or maybe a team meeting in a fortnight or a week or something.
Yeah.
I guess I'm curious, based off that, if something does come up within a consult or something that comes up in your day-to-day work that does sit with you and impact you, what does dealing with that look like?
I think it does depend on the team you're in at that point. There have been like teams which they just have to see 12 patients in the next hour. And so if you're in one of those teams, you have to just hold up that mask of professionalism and just make sure that you're attending to the needs of the patient you're seeing right now, not what's on your mind. But then also there have been teams where they've really made it a big point to let the younger people on the team who are still learning about these things to like I was like allowed to just like tap one of the door doctors and say, hey, can we just like go have a chat and a cup of tea right now? Mm-hmm. And then I was just allowed to like rant about what just happened sometimes. But once again, it really isn't like about the individuals. It's more of like what the individuals have in their capacity.
Mm-hmm. Mm, for sure. It sounds like it can be intense at times, but when you've needed it, sometimes you've had the space to be able to have a conversation about it. And I think that that's what's really important. Hey.
Mm. So I'm wondering as well, like, how do you fit ethical self-care? You know, sometimes you do just need that little break, and it sounds good that you can get that debrief in if you really need. But what about, you know, that really self-care either throughout your day or at the end of your day?
Yeah, I definitely like think it's just like making and keeping promises with myself. Mm. And so I remember like I remember this about Life Matters. Cuba, when she took breaks, was the scariest person ever, because she was in the break room with her earphones in and just not look at anyone, and she had the. And so I try and like model that a little bit, where I promise myself that on this break, I have no obligation to anyone but myself. Mm-hmm. And then once in a way, when that just isn't possible, because like that's the thing that needs to happen, I make a promise to myself. Like, I think we were just talking about how busy my last week was, but I made myself a promise that this weekend I'm going to have 2 days of no work. Mm. And so I'm now going to work a lot until Friday afternoon, which is when I'm going to have beers with some friends and not think about the hospital again. And so making those promises and then keeping those promises and then remembering that I have my yarn to go home and knit with at home.
Yeah, nice.
Amazing. What good boundary setting, hey? I know that's something I struggle with, but you're right. A lot of the time it does come down to really prioritizing yourself, and it'd be so incredibly difficult to do the work that you do and the work that we do without, you know, making priorities, and the priorities ourselves. So I think that's really powerful. Hey, awesome. Well, we do have a few more questions that we would love to ask you. I'm really enjoying the conversation so far. I don't know about you, Omri.
I can speak for myself that I'm also like, yeah, genuinely really enjoying it.
Amazing. So we'll continue the conversation after popping to a quick ad break to hear from our sponsor.
At Anytime Fitness Dunedin, our mission is to raise the self-esteem of the world. A healthy lifestyle doesn't start and stop at the gym. It starts with a plan, which is why we offer solutions that incorporate fitness, nutrition, well-being, and recovery. With 3 local clubs to choose from, with 24/7 access, we're certain you'll find your fit. Contact us today to get started. Call 03 455 0013 or visit anytimefitness.co.nz.
Welcome back to the Hope Centre podcast. Yes, we have really been enjoying the conversation so far with Josiah. And as I've said a million times, you're really making me think and making me think about my own ideas around what self-care looks like, around, you know, boundaries and ethics. And I think that that's really important. Off the back of our last conversation, I'm wondering your perspective, what it would look like to truly integrate lived experience and clinical work in a way that honours both. Because we know both have got their positives, but how do we bring this together and make some awesome model that replicates, you know, the awesome work done in both?
I think that is quite a tough question, because like there's so many different things that we can talk about here, but just like if you don't mind a bit of like plagiarism, I think it was Grace in the episode we spoke to her, she discussed like the way that they attempt to use Rangatira in therapy and kind of put the power back on the patient there and let them choose what they want. I think that is a thing that we can really like add to what we do in the hospital right now. Mm. I feel like if I ever walk into a room, even though I'm like a medical student, so I'm quite low down on the totem pole, if I walk into the room in my scrubs, I just feel like immediately I have this like weird sense of power.
Yeah.
And then conversely, I imagine like if there was a patient there, they would feel like, oh, this is a doctor that's walked in the room now, so now they have the power. But and I think if you ask a lot of the doctors too, even they don't quite like that massive differential in power. Yeah, well, at least like all the doctors I like hanging out with,
the cool doctors,
the cool ones.
Yeah. Because that is not the way in which you encourage a patient to do well. If it's always just, I think there are times when a doctor knows more about a particular like specific thing, and then they can offer advice. But then a doctor just commanding someone to do something will never really lead to improve patient outcomes. It is all about like offering options, of offering them like some information about what all the options mean, and then just allowing them to have the danga tira tanga of just operating their own life.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I think that's quite important, because obviously in our, you know, lived experience work, that's a huge part of what we do, is trying to reduce that power balance. Because yeah, you're right, I know I experienced this myself, walking into like my doctor's and I love my doctor, but walking in there and just the instant assumption that this person knows more than me, and you know what they tell me is going to be right. But even I, you know, went to and did some advocacy for someone that I support at Life Matters yesterday, and it was very interesting doing advocacy in a clinical space, because my perspective is with this guest when we do anything is, does this work for you? Is this okay for you? What would you like? And going with them and supporting them in a clinical space where it was like, this is what we're doing. It's like, that's really interesting, because yeah, as you said, how do you improve patient outcomes when that's, you know, patient wants and needs aren't the focus?
I also really appreciate as well, Josiah, you recognizing you feel that power, and recognizing in some ways is going to have real positives, because, you know, also empower can empower you, but also recognizing it as a thing of, you know, when I was an occupational therapy student and I had a placement in a hospital, I even felt them having power. You know, I had my own uniform and felt a different sense of power going in to see our patients. But again, like you said, medical student, occupational therapy student, I was also very low on that totem pole. And if someone walked in with scrubs or white coat, I felt that power too. And so I think it's interesting to recognize and see, yeah, all the way down from medical professionals to patients, everyone feels that power in there as well, and feels like they're in different aspects of that power.
Touching on like just the idea of like being like an advocate for a patient too, I definitely like think that it's 100% true that there are a lot of times where, because we are allowed to, the medical professional in the room can take power if something isn't going the way which they think they are. And I think that like that needs some scrutiny sometimes, because like I'm not always sure that the medical professional in the room is always going to be right, because expert in the disease, patient is expert in the patient's life, you know?
Yeah, and I know that's something I definitely stress to a lot of the people I support, is no one knows exactly what it's like to experience life the way that you do. No one's lived in your shoes before, and they never will. So I think deep down you know yourself best. And I think that's really important, hey? Cool.
I'm wondering as well, what keeps you hopeful and inspired about the work that you're currently doing?
I think it always like comes back to tetangata, tetangata, tetangata. Like it really is all about the people. I see people in the hospital who should be so burnt out and so over everything because of the pressure put on them. But every day they come to work and they are stellar with patients. I see patients here who are making such a big difference in their own life, but also in the life of the ward. Like, they really bring all the energy into there. And then also I see people out of the hospital. Like, I remember all of us that, like, Life Matters, how there's so many people who are doing things to move the world forward in a really positive way. And that is what keeps me going, just seeing the work people are doing.
I hope there is self-reflection in that, and, you know, from talking to you and from hearing from other people, the work that you're doing as well is huge. And some really cool stuff as well. So I hope there's some self-reflection and hope in yourself too.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we have got another question or so before we wrap up our conversation. Before we get there, though, we'll jump to another word from our sponsor.
Anytime Fitness Dunedin is here to raise the self-esteem of the world. Whether you're new to fitness or getting back into a routine, now's the time to put yourself first. With a supportive community, 3 local clubs, flexible membership options and access anytime, we're here to help you reach your goals. Get in touch with our friendly team today. Call 03 455 0013 or visit anytimefitness.co.nz.
Thank you once again for Anytime Fitness for sponsoring the Hope Centre. Josiah, you know, we've talked about a few things around self-care and a lot of the work that you're doing. And I know for a lot of people that we support at Life Matters and our listeners too, don't know where to go for a lot of help. So I'm wondering if you have any resources or recommendations to our listeners who want to learn more about some of the things that we've talked about today.
So I actually like think that a bunch of the stuff I've looked up has only been like research articles. Mm. And so I think that's a good place to start. And if you guys don't have access to research articles, message someone in research, because we are very happy to give you guys articles for free. But maybe don't tell the journalist that. but I do have 2 books that did help me along in my journey of it isn't so much like self-care. It's more of understanding the value and zest in life. Mm. Viktor Frankl had a book called Yes to Life, which is a bunch of his talks at different events, and he's a really inspiring guy. And also there's A Matter of Life and Death, which is written by a different therapist called Yalom, about his and his wife's journey towards death, and they wrote a chapter each as they died. And it's this beautiful journey about understanding what the point of life was.
Gosh, amazing. Cool. Some new resources for the Hope Centre Library, maybe?
Yeah.
We've got a wee library now. I think you'd enjoy it.
I can't believe I left. Oh, my God. I would have loved to come back to the library.
If you knew how different it was, your mind would be blowing.
I'm hearing Josiah, Life Matters peer supporter and librarian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and also, I'm a big fan of the restaurants you guys have around you. Mm-hmm. I really miss, Noodle House. So I would love to go back there, grab a book, go to Noodle House for lunch.
Yeah. No, something we have contemplated is where we think around the Hope Centre the most money's been spent on food. Noodle House is a very good shout. Mm. Yeah, for sure. Well, I would like to say thank you for coming and speaking on the podcast. I know you reached out because you had been listening, but we totally appreciate you being here. Mm. And as I said, leaving with a lot to think about, a lot of stuff to carry forward with us, which is really exciting. Mm. Before we wrap up, I was wondering if you had any final thoughts or messages you would like to share for someone who might be listening and struggling.
One thing I will leave you is with this really interesting thing I read about a year ago called the BEAM hypothesis, which is just a real complex term for a really basic thing. So what happens in our life is that we're really great at picking up on the worst things happening in the present moment. And so it's much easier for us to like click on a really bad article in the news and everything. And so we imagine that the world is in a state of decline. And also what happens is in the backs of our minds, as we think back in the past, we always tend to gloss over the bad stuff and think of the best things. And so this really strange thing happens in lives where we tend to think that we are in a state of decline. And I just want people to know this happens, because once you know this happens, you can pick up on this happening in you. And I know that I always think that I'm on a declining state. But once I realize that, I can just start to think, oh, no, this is a normal thing that happens in my mind. And actually, my life is going okay. Everything is fine. The world isn't going to crash and burn tomorrow. So, yeah, I just always want to leave people with that idea that your brain is biased towards these ideas. So don't let your brain fool you.
Mm. Oh, my gosh. Amazing.
That's really good of challenging ourselves that our thoughts aren't always fact.
Mm. Perfect. Well, with our last few minutes that we've got with you, we will go through our final five. Just some quick fire, short answer questions, and then we will invite you to leave a question for the next guest on the podcast. At this stage, we don't know who it is, so choose wisely. Cool.
First up, what does well-being mean to you?
Being strong in yourself.
Perfect.
Nice. And is there anything that brings you a sense of calm, balance, or peace, apart from knitting?
It'll be like listening to my grandma telling me a story about her life.
Mm. Aww. That's lovely. No ghosts, though.
If you could make one rule that everyone had to follow, what would it be?
It'll have to be think slow and speak after a breath.
I like that. What would you tell your younger self now?
it is A-okay to be lonely, because everyone else is also feeling very lonely in the world. Just reach out to someone.
True.
Great message.
Yeah. Did your younger self think that you would be a medical student?
My younger self thought I'll forever be a little loser with a stammer who couldn't talk. So who would have thought?
Aw, cool. Lastly, leave a question for the next guest. What would you like to know for the next person? This can be anything. We've had some serious ones. We've had some pretty goofy ones. So it's up to you.
I think I would love to know what your next guest would like to be famous for.
Oh my gosh, cool. Do you have an answer for that question yourself?
Oh, I didn't think of it actually. I think I would just like to be famous for being a decent person. Mm-hmm. Not anything big, just being like a guy that just tried his best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice. Omri, do you have any thoughts off the top of your head?
Basketball.
Yeah. Basketball.
Yeah.
You can tell he's tall just from...
As a kid, I did really want to play basketball. It was my dream to play for the Otago Nuggets. Dreaming big.
Dreaming big.
Yeah, it's actually something that horrified me a couple weeks ago, because I named my dog, my childhood dog, after someone that played for the Nuggets. I remember going up to him and asking if it was okay. And it, fairly recently being like, man... How weird would it be to be that level of famous where someone's naming their pets after you?
I mean,
but you've also got another part-time job, outside of that.
I mean, you are that level of famous, are you not?
Not quite a pet. I taught swimming at Moana Pool for 7 years, and when we're doing the Life Matters treat appeal the other week. I saw the parents of a kid I used to teach and got in conversation with them. And then at the end, the parents held back and they're like, yeah, I just want you to know you made a real big impact on our kid. Because he was two, three, four when I taught him. And they're like, yeah, when he was six, he got a toy elf and he named it Omri.
That's the essence of life right there. You're living a good life, Omri.
Thank you very much. And I think what you said before of the zest, that really brought up the, oh, wow.
How about you, Anna? What have you been famous for?
Oh my gosh, that's a really good question. And I'm not 100% sure because I think I'm okay at everything. I don't think I'm fantastic at something. So I need some time to ponder on this. But you know what? When I think of it, Josiah, I'll let you know.
Now, and also like what I will say is that you are very famous in my memories of Life Matters for having the coziest jumpers ever.
Yeah, well,
like, yes. There you go, see, fluffy knitted, love it.
No, and after you started talking about it, I was like, that's right, he was making hats and he was making, like, you were always knitting, hey?
I have a hat in my bag right now, actually.
Yeah.
Protect the hair from the wind.
Yeah. What do you think you miss most about the Hope Centre? Aside from Noodle House.
Noodle House was good. I think what I miss most is like those hours when we accidentally had like a bunch of free time because something may have cancelled them or that. And then we just had the most like intense chats about such crazy topics. Mm-hmm. I really miss the real melting pot of ideas that happened there.
Yeah, well, you're always welcome back.
Oh, believe me, if I was any closer, I'd be living there.
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's always sad when people go, when they've made such an impact, but like, so also, on the other hand, so awesome to see them out living their lives and do really cool things. So, yeah, it's lovely. And lovely to reconnect again, of course. Thank you. Thank you for coming on to the podcast. I've really enjoyed my time today. And as I say, I feel like I'm taking a lot forward with me, a lot to think about, a lot to maybe do some research on. Yeah, it's always the best way to leave this place, I think.
Big time. And yeah, I want to reinforce, you know, like your ripple effects are still very strong at Life Matters. And sometimes we're like, hey, what's going on? Like, oh, what's this? Like, this is cool. Where did this start? And they're like, Josiah. I'm like, should have guessed. Yeah, so like your ripple effects are still there very strongly. And yeah, have also really appreciated your kōrero, and yeah, making me think is a dangerous game and you've got it happening. And so, yeah, even more changes at the Hope Centre to come.
Oh, hey, it was so amazing to have a yarn with you guys after like a few years. And like much like parts of me are living in Life Matters is always going to live in me when I'm in my clinical roles over here. So thank you guys for organizing all that too.
Awesome. Perfect. No worries. Like, time's flowing by, but you know what? You're always welcome back anytime. I'm sure, you know, you've got an extensive list of knowledge or things that you brought forward that we could possibly talk about. So who knows? Maybe we'll meet again in the podcast space, hey?
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Cool. Also, thank you to Omri for helping me host the podcast.
Thank you, Anna.
Again, we're on a roll. Thank you to ORFM, to Life Matters, and to Anytime Fitness for sponsoring the podcast. What are you going to do after this, Omri? Go to the gym?
After every podcast,
yeah.
Straight to Anytime
for sure.
Do you know what you're working on today? Is it push, pull, legs, stretching? What's the goal today?
Every day is leg day.
Every day is leg day. Oof, calves for days, man.
Yeah. It's to get through the Dunedin Hills.
Yeah, for sure. If you've got any topics you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, please reach out to our Facebook page or email admin@lifematters.org.nz. Cool. Well, we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to our Hope Centre podcast. The most important message we can leave you with today is that it's okay to ask for help and support. You can contact us at Life Matters on 027 240 0114 by phone or text, or send us a message on our Facebook page. You can also contact us through our website. Just look up lifematters.org.nz. You can also drop in to see us at 63 Hanover Street. We're open.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.